Thank you, everyone, for coming. We appreciate it. You know, it's one of the first really nice days out. I'm Krista Benniston. I'm the planning coordinator of AMAT. And I thought maybe we could just do a quick round of introductions so that everyone is familiar with who you are and if you want to quickly why you're here and what you're interested in.
Joe Eisler, Little Ward. I'm just interested in what's going on with Clark.
Where are you from?
Ward 1, up by King Elementary.
I'm Leslie Crowley. My boss asked me if I want to come here. He's the Portage County Engineer, so I run the tax map office. I'm a land surveyor.
Hey, my name is Mike Ondecker. I'm proud to say I've been around AMAT CIC for quite a while now. To enjoy the meeting, so glad to see you all here tonight as well.
Since we have some new people here, I'll do this one time again. Major William Mackey, Air Force retired. I am a federal officer. I still hold my commission. So what you say here, you say to a federal officer. That aside, I am retired and interested in AMATS and the transportation because I work with a company who did a lot of trucking. So I've sort of kept my interest up on, as the staff knows, interest up on what goes on AMAS planning-wise.
Dustin Baker, Ward 6, general transportation planning interest.
Fred Wise, I'm a resident of Cuyahoga Falls. I represent the Acker Bike Club primarily, so if anybody talks about bikes, it's coming.
You know Tim Briggs, don't you? He's a bicycle enthusiast from Cuyahoga Falls. I'm shocked that you don't know
him. I made all my sight.
Okay.
There's 200 some people on golf.
I'm Robert Coletta. I'm a concerned citizen living in Bath. I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, Transportation Corps, and interested in freight.
Jake Pazot. I work for AMAT. I'm a retired reserve as a major of Corps of Engineers.
My name's Harrison. I just moved up here at the beginning of the year from Dallas. I used to work for the NPO in Dallas, the North Central Texas Council of Governments. And so I was just wanting to hear more about what AMATS is doing, and I'm primarily interested in the bike plan.
Okay. I'm Heather Reidel with AMATS.
I'm Seth Bush, also with AMATS.
And I'm Jeff Hardy.
I just had one quick question before we start.
Yes.
Especially directed to the AMATS people. We're not going to see the picture on the right on the Akron Expressway anytime soon.
We'll save that for the free report. I hope not. So thank you. Welcome. Just a quick kind of a few things that are going on around the office. I don't know if some of you are probably familiar with, we had to have a planning grant, which is money purely for transportation planning that could be things like complete street projects, it could be feasibility studies, with the idea of getting planning dollars to help leverage other private investment and to tie to land use, putting money into a lot of the things that we talk about, but purely on the planning side. And so that application just went out. It is due at the end of May. All communities in Summit and Portage County and part of Wayne are eligible, and it's up to $50,000. It's not for construction, but it is just pure planning. But it's pretty broad, full applications online. If you're interested in looking at it or making sure any of your elected officials look at it. A couple things that are different this year are we are requiring, or not requiring, but we are giving additional points if you provide funding or if the community provides funding. So we hope to get some good projects, and we'll keep you abreast of how that is going. But that's, we kind of took a break from that last year, revamped it, and I think we're hoping to really get some good projects. This last round of funding in January that we approved, there were several projects, such as the multi-use path on the north side of 18 that was approved that had been kind of seeded with the planning grant for Montrose that we did in 2013. So we're starting to see some projects from that program, and it's, I think we're pleased with it, and so we're excited to see that grow. If anyone has any questions or... Cool. That, I will let Mr. Gardner talk about the draft freight plan. There are, I think there should be full copies up there if anyone's interested. We have a couple extra copies of the presentation if anyone wants them. but it is still in the draft form, so definitely looking for comments and thoughts. There are a few things still in red that we're still collecting data on, but yeah, I'll let you take it from there.
All right, thank you. Our introductory slide here, on the right you have freight truck on the Ohio Turnpike, which was the only roadway in the state of Ohio that allows triple trailers like that, so you should not see these in the Akron area for safety purposes. And the freight plan was last updated in December of 2012. This is a plan that we do every 4 years or so as part of the regional transportation plan update process. We try to take a comprehensive look at freight movement in the area and ways to improve it as part of the plan update process, and we try to use it to keep abreast of what's going on and then have some constructive projects that maybe we can recommend for the TIP eventually, not using one type of funding or another. The purpose of this report is to identify the assets in the AMATS area that move freight, the highways, the rails, in the airports primarily. We have no maritime freight movement in the AMATS area. We have a number of analytical tools that we use, mapping, and the data that we use we obtain from a number of different sources. Try to get an understanding of what's going on in the area, as well as contact private providers and those people such as ODOT who have a good understanding of freight movement in the area. And then we use, of course, all that information to develop a plan for improving the movement of freight. In terms of the highway system, these are public rights of way that taxpayers pay for. And the national highway system would be the most important of those. They move the most freight in the area, in the AMATS area. And in terms of the national highway system, now the federal government is providing funds either to public agencies, but also to the private rail operators to improve access from the rail to the highway, or any other number of projects in the area. For the rail system, they are private, but Metro RTA does own rail lines in the area, and a portion of what Metro owns is open for freight and in Summit County. And then continuing south into Stark County and part of Portage County. We have one major airport in the area, but not a lot of freight moves through the Akron Canton Airport. And we have no maritime movement of freight anymore since the canal was flooded out in 1913. That's down the drain. Our biggest obstacle to the moving of freight are the problems that we have on the highways. We have delays, particularly at the peak hours, but the delays can also be caused by the weather, incidents, traffic crashes, traffic accidents of some sort, and other safety issues such as geometrics, tight ramps could lead to problems, or bottlenecks if all the freight movement ends up being channeled through, for instance, the north end of the Kenmorelade or the central interchange, then you have congestion-related issues there. On the rail system, there are congestion-related issues since most of the rail freight is moved on the private rail lines. The rail companies really are responsible for the great part of the issues with rail congestion. And there are choke points in the area that slow down the movement of freight. One in particular is in the Clinton area. So sometimes they're slow, or we have little ability to make changes to the rail system. But there are efforts now being pushed by the Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Rail Administration to work with the rail companies, particularly where they interact with the highway system, to alleviate some of the rail congestion. These are our truck volumes, our most recent traffic counts. and the light green dots are truck terminals, so that's where the access is in our area. A large percentage of the freight movement, truck freight movement, goes into and out of the AMATS area, not necessarily an origin or destination. The dark red areas that you see are the highest truck volumes, and you'll see I-76 through Norton and Barberton, and then I-76 through mostly the city of Akron there. ODOT is taking steps right now to do quite a bit of work on I-76. The idea is to make I-76 at least three lanes through the greater part of the Amex area. So in Norton there, you see in Barberton, work is going to begin. They're going to improve the State Route 21 I-76 interchange. They're going to continue east from there. They're going to completely redo the State Street Worcester Road interchange. They're going to reconfigure that. That will begin in 2019. They're beginning the access, the right-of-way, acquiring the right-of-way for that project. Through the central part of Akron, in the city of Akron, ODOT's beginning the Main Street Broadway interchange project. They're already clearing, they've already acquired and they're clearing the right-of-way for that project, so they're in the middle of construction for that. And then they're going to be, right now they're working on the central interchange portions of that, and that will continue for the next couple of years. How to improve our system as far as moving freight. Right now, there are projects in the works, as we mentioned, I-76, but also I-271 in the north part of Summit County. Improving capacity, widening the road, improving the interchanges, improving the ramps so that you have a safer movement through those areas. Central interchange, of course. So they're trying to remove the bottlenecks, improve the geometrics of the roadways so that the freight can move through the area more efficiently. This is a map of the rail ownership with the traffic volume overlaid with the airports and the truck terminals. If you have a copy of the report, it's quite a bit to look at. They're all in one place. But the interesting thing about this map is that you have the rail train volumes, daily train volumes. Our busiest railroad in the area you'll see is the light green Norfolk Southern line that goes up through Macedonia there. This is this map shows problem areas on freeways for the movement of freight. Essentially, it's similar to the other map that you saw. You see I-76 and I-77. You see a short portion of State Route 8 in the North Hill area. And then there's also some intersection congestion in Hudson and in Streetsboro, Twinsburg. There's a lot of truck traffic there. The problem on I-77 sometimes seems to be the uphill grade slows down the trucks, causing some backup there as 77 goes up towards 271. This is the central interchange. This is being reconfigured. The map, the ramps here, because of the tight turns, and here also, I don't know if you drive through this section or not, but you see the wall is all marked up where the cars or the trucks hit that there because they're going too fast around it. So they're making an attempt to improve all that and make it more efficient and safe to drive. Otherwise, you end up with that if you're going too fast around there.
What are they doing to the central to improve it?
They're going to lengthen the curve of the ramps there in question so that the vehicle can go around it at a faster speed without the danger.
Similar 271 up from Macedonia. The one from eight.
Right. Exactly, yes. One of the safety issues that we have that everyone has are at-grade crossings. And ODOT's made a great effort over the last few years to provide safety funds to try to separate those grades. And particularly in areas where there aren't even any gates, cars don't slow down for the train, and you end up with accidents. Usually the car loses against the train. So here we have what we've ranked for our area in terms of rail crossings. Number one, there's Broad Boulevard. That area generally sees 32 trains per day with an average vehicle daily travel of 14,940. So we use those two factors to come up with a score divided by 1,000. So this is our quick ranking of what we would consider to be the at-grade crossings in most need of being separated. And in terms of congestion, all those cars have to wait every time a train comes by. In terms of safety, all the people who aren't paying attention and stopped in the middle of the tracks for, yes.
You know, that, I'm not sure if ODOT was involved, but anyway, the rail company and the city come together, they're going to redo the lights on Broad Boulevard where it crosses the tracks to try to get cars through there faster that are going eastbound and maybe westbound to make sure we don't have cars or trucks sitting on the rails, which have caused some of the vehicle or train accidents down there.
Broad Boulevard shows up here as our number one need if we want to identify it as a need. But due to the geometrics, the proximity of State Route 8, that would be a very difficult crossing to try to separate. But we put it on. It's on the list because of the two factors that we use to come up with the list. But, you know, in terms of practicality, it may be easier to do the second or the third one on here, the fourth one. But that would be up to, you know, the policy committee or ODOT, working with ODOT to decide, you know, what we should make a priority. The last time we did the freight report, our number one priority was Highland Road in Macedonia. And that project was actually completed, which I have a picture of it here. We can get to that in a second. But we have these needs, and eventually we get to them, and the project gets done. So then we end up with a revised list a couple years later today. And this is what we have here. So in terms of practicality, we didn't weed out. We just put what we have here in terms of data, and this is the list that we have. In terms of doing any kind of project, the public has to have an input whether they want that project or not. The expense has to be taken into account, and the funding has to be obtained. This is... That's Waterloo Road in Barberton in February, just a month or so ago. Someone drove around the gate. It actually had gates at that crossing, the at-grade crossing. This was at 6:15 in the morning. I don't know what the motive was. Someone was in a hurry, apparently, and drove around a bunch of cars around the gates and onto the tracks and was hit by a car. There were flashing lights, gates, you know, but at some point, obviously separating the grade altogether might be the best course of action.
When you say separating the grade, you mean making a bridge?
Yes, right. I'm going to have a picture here in a second. So if something's at grade, it means they're both at the same level. So the cars have a race to the train, depending on the number of trains and the volume of traffic, you could really back up the traffic. There is a grade crossing that was discussed here. It didn't show up on our list because the amount of traffic there is low. But the problem there is that the trains stop. There's a choke point there, and it's CSX. It used to be a double line. Now it's only a single line. So the trains stop to let the other train pass. So the volume of trains is not that high, but since the train stops, it sits there, causes a backup in traffic. It's a safety issue if an ambulance needs to get through. the police or something like that. So it doesn't show up on the list, but it's in the report as something that we would like to get.
Is that the one on page 18 you're talking about, the CSX Lambert to Warwick,
yes.
Section of Clinton?
Yes. This is Highland Road now as it's been improved. That was all at one level. The street used to cross the rail line that you see there, so that's how they separated. It was a $10.5 million project that was just completed in July of 2013. It was completed on schedule. That section there sees 74 trains per day. It's one of the highest train activity areas in the Amex area, in the Macedonia, Twinsburg area. Norfolk Southern has a large rail yard just north of there. So, and there's a large number of trucks that also go through Highland Road there. So the issues are safety, congestion, and also emissions. So for every vehicle that sits there waiting across the rail line, it's burning a lot of gas and generating a lot of pollution, particularly the diesel trucks as they wait there. So this is a good project to complete. This was something that was talked about for years and then it was finally built. So we made progress. And this, of course, as I mentioned, was the number one need in the at-grade crossings the last time we did the report 4 years ago. What are our next steps? The staff is recommending that you approve this freight plan so that we can incorporate some of the needs that are in there into the congestion management process, eventually for inclusion in the regional transportation plan. And then down the road, if funding is available to make some of the improvements that we discuss here, eventually include them in the TIP so they can be funded and deconstructed. Right now we're working with ODOT to develop performance measures and goals for freight. Some of those performance measures and goals are the reduction of congestion, safety issues. We want safe movement of not just freight but cars in the area. Performance measures in terms of time travel for everyone that uses our roads in the area. And then also just the efficient movement of freight and its coordination between the different modes. Are there any questions?
This one. Just in looking at the grade crossings and the ratings, you know, vehicles per train, the number of trains per day, there's such a great variance. I mean, 74 to as well as 28, just as a layman, you know, difference in those, can you just explain why the numbers are so great, why there's so many trains at a certain crossing?
Well, the rail lines are owned by different rail companies, so depending on customers, for instance, that Norfolk Southern has. Norfolk Southern made improvements to their whole privately owned rail system in the area several years ago. And they're a big national company. They have a lot of customers. What they did several years ago was make sure that they had the ability to carry a double stack of containers on all of their rail.
Mm-hmm.
So they finished that project. So I guess since they run such an efficient system that they have a lot of customers that want to use their system. So CSX has a different system altogether. Their customers might be in different parts of the state or country, so they go through different areas.
Okay, so it's driven by the companies themselves.
It is. Wheeling and Lake Erie is a smaller company. They're more regional rather than national. And then in Barberton, Norton, Medina area, you have the Akron-Barberton cluster of rail and so on, Wheeling and Lake Erie. But as a smaller company, they just don't generate as many trips as the bigger companies.
Any other thoughts? As we keep updating this, we will go to the our technical advisory committee and policy committee in May. So it'll be online again and publicized. If you take your time, look at it, you know, send any comments to Jeff. But it'll be available for comments, up for, for over the next month. If you have any more thoughts or anything to say on it.
I was just new to looking at this, but I was wondering, I doubt that this is like any pedestrian or bike impact or community impact. I mean, a lot of the lines are set in stone right now, but I know, it was all vehicle congestion, but there may be safety locations where there's frequent crossings. I can think of one right by the Metro Transit Center. And then even now, as they're going through and fixing I-76 for freight, there's no consideration for pedestrians in the way they develop the plan. So I don't know if that's something that can be mentioned as a somehow a need to research and investigate how to better do that.
No, that's okay. I mean, because we have, we started to look, I think we have, 2012 and 2014, looking at where pedestrian crashes are. And that kind of thing, but I don't think we've looked at it, in very, looking at rail crossings and where those are and if there are any specific instances. When you say the metro, are you saying where the people are crossing illegally right at the metro station?
Right, but it would...
it's an area that makes sense.
It indicates, you may find places like the goat paths, but that are people using the rail line.
That's a good one.
And the other thing, too, is, the way they... interstate was put in a manner without any consideration for the neighborhoods, and I think it might be time to start looking, is there any way to mitigate some of the impacts that have occurred to those neighborhoods as part of the process? I know it's way out there, but
do you think things like, I know that you've been involved in Ohio New York Canal Ways, looking at things like lighting and music and more mural type things underneath underpasses along the towpath and a few things like that.
If there's an identified pedestrian route, you're probably talking. I remember ODOT did in some of their highway projects started doing aesthetic considerations, putting a certain small percentage into sprucing it up, but it seems that was more for the visual quality. The driving public, maybe for the backyard, somebody that's up against it. And they have also now started looking at noise mitigation. But I don't think they really think about, pedestrian routes, things that were cut off, unless it's a pedestrian bridge over a highway, that was put in at some point. But I just know that, main Broadway is, really barren as far as bikes and pedestrians. So now as you start looking ahead, it'd be a good consideration to start including.
No, that's a good point. It's not something that we've looked into before, so.
Okay. Can I ask a question about the performance goals that you're talking about relative to congestion relief? It sounds like those are sort of still in development. You guys are still talking to ODOT about that. It's as a congestion reduction, is that specific, or is that primarily looking at increasing capacity on highways, or?
Well, whatever could improve travel time, for instance, for the trucking or freight through the area, whatever would improve travel time, whether it's ITS, sometimes it would depend, but generally it ends up being a capacity issue. But in terms of safety, ramp reconfiguration, for example, at the south end of the Kenmore, they redid that ramp because trucks were always flipping over there. I don't know if you are familiar with the south end of Kenmore, I-76 eastbound. Also at the central interchange, because the ramps were tight there, the trucks were going too fast, and they flip over there too. So all those issues, whether it's congestion capacity related or whether it's incident related, ODOT would set goals based on that. So improving travel time, reducing the congestion through whatever means.
So is it ODOT then that's developing these performance goals?
Federal Highway Administration is developing performance measures. ODOT will then develop their own performance measures. They can either adopt the federal highways or have a just reason to adopt their own performance measures. And then once ODOT adopts their performance measures, then we would have the same opportunity as well. So we don't have to adopt the exact same performance measures as ODOT, but it would probably be some kind of variation, if not identical, to those for the movement of freight. There are a number of issues. We have to do performance measures for safety, for congestion, for the movement of freight. So there are a number of areas that performance measures, we're going to have to develop performance measures, set goals, and then develop the plan and the TIP in terms of reaching those goals. So if the goal in terms of safety is to reduce fatalities, then we would have to keep track of fatalities in the area, which we already do. We do a crash report every year. Then we would have to have a plan for reducing fatalities or for reducing total crashes in the area. By their location, over a period of time, we would have to justify what we were doing, and then the projects that we approved for the TIP would have to make improvements towards those goals. And that would include freight as well.
My reason for asking that is because, you know, the more capacity that's built, the more it induces demand, the more we need to build more capacity. And I'm wondering if there's any sort of integration of performance goals to increase transportation alternatives for others, so that in turn helps freight movement as well. And so we're not always having to build ourselves out of that.
Our congestion management report, we have the present congestion management report would have been developed about 3.5 years ago. So we would be in the process of developing a new congestion management report. And there are a number of alternatives other than road widening for improving capacity or lowering the travel times from one area through another in terms of freight. So yes, road widening is not the main consideration.
MET's overall policy, how we fund projects, is very anti-capacity. I think like if you're a preservation project and you're applying, you get 25 points. I think you only get, I think it's either 5 or 10 for capacity, which is enough to put them to the middle to the bottom of the list. So I know that's one issue that we've been talking with. We have a couple of communities. Fairlawn, Cleveland, Massillon, south of 18 is one. You know, they would like to widen it. And right now our policy is very anti adding additional lanes and adding capacity that they probably will never score well. So I think, you know, that's one thing we have changed in our how we're funding projects. But we have had a few communities that have, you know, that do have capacity issues that they want to address. But right now we're pretty in how we fund projects, you know, it's way down the list. This, you know, maintenance and preservation get significantly more points. And we've seen that, you know, and how we get projects, those are quite a bit higher.
In terms of arterials, a signal coordination project would technically increase your capacity, but not widen the road. That would be one way to improve capacity without widening the road and reduce your travel times for anybody who uses it.
Could you just comment briefly on what the connection between issues like the gasoline tax and how it might affect our area, our ability to get the funding in, you know, future years? We're going to be going through an important political cycle here in between now and the end of the year.
In terms of matching the federal money, that's available.
Pardon me?
In terms of matching, having the ability to match the federal funds.
The gas tax has been a hot item because it hasn't been basically fundamentally altered in quite a while now, quite a length of time. And we've also got a case where the available funding is basically going to run dry if we don't do something. So What's your take on this dynamic that's going on with taxation versus the need for infrastructure help?
Well, we didn't address funding issues or funding availability in the freight report.
But anecdotally, how then do you, what kind of vibes are you getting on that?
My personal vibe.
Well, you hear things, you see things.
Well, the DOT is expected to, I guess, fund itself through the gas tax, but it's one of the few federal departments that has to fund itself. So, you know, the Department of Defense doesn't have to fund itself. Yeah. It's turned on the wrong thing here. But I get the feeling that the Highway Trust Fund would be terminated and that transportation funding would be like every other government program, and that all this discussion about whether the Department of Transportation has the ability to fund itself or not would go away. It would be like every other department in the bankrupt United States federal government.
Right.
I mean, would they just print the money to pay for the freeways like they print the money to pay for every other thing?
I mean, there was just a new, so we just had a new 5-year bill passed. And I mean, that's the, you know, the last one was 2 years, I think, before that was, you know, so, right. You know, so, and that's, you know, and unfortunately, I think to your point, a lot of people were disappointed that there was not a dedicated funding source from that. So, you know, in 5 years, we still, like you said, we don't have, it's still, you know, the Highway Trust Fund is insolvent. We keep shoring it up with all these little things from different funding sources. So, you know, there's still a huge amount of needs across the country for infrastructure versus, you know, remotely the money that we have. But with that new bill, you know, they kicked the can down 5 years and didn't address finding a funding source. So, you know, no one still seems to whatsoever want to touch talking about the gas tax at any level politically. So I don't see that any time soon. We've kicked the can at least, you know, 4 to 5 years.
This is discouraging on two fronts. First of all, I don't get the impression that our esteemed governor is a transportation guy. I don't think he gets it. He sent money back to the federal government that could have funded an important rail project in the state. It was a passenger-related project, but he felt if the trains weren't going to go 200 miles an hour, it wasn't worth his trouble to see the project through. And another point is that he's just, as far as the relationship of the Ohio DOT to the Metropolitan Planning Organizations, I think that needs a lot of work as well. And when an important infrastructure issue like transportation, it's a jobs issue, it's an economic issue, it's a social issue, but it's just not getting the attention that I think it deserves in the state of Ohio as a whole. I would also say the latest facts that I've heard, and I would glad to stand corrected if I'm throwing out the wrong numbers, but my information is that for every dollar that goes to the federal government from Ohio taxpayers, we get back 92 cents. In Pennsylvania, right next door to us, for every dollar that Pennsylvania citizens send to the federal government, they get back $1.16.
Yeah, that's based on, I think Ohio is a donor state. Which is we don't get, I mean, certain states like Wyoming would get more money based on, you know, they get more than they put in.
But that's quite a disparity for states that are right mm-hmm. next door to each other, both industrial-based states,
mm-hmm.
Rust Belt states, if you will.
Yeah,
flyover states, if you would want to be so polite.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, there's a lot of major federal, like you said, you know, there's definitely a lot of issues with how we fund transportation.
The squeaky wheel.
And a lot of it's, you know, politically unfavorable and no one wants to touch it. But, you know, I think, so we're trying our best, I think, you know, to continue to do what we can with what we have. And, you know, we'll push funding for sure with what we can on our boards and members. But, you know, there's, I think, trying to be, you know, make the best with what we can. And we had $19 million in projects awarded, and I think we had about 120 asked. So there's definitely needs. But I do, does anyone have any more comments on the freight? I want to get to the bike stuff before we run out of time.
I want to add on to what Andy said, and I agree with what you were talking about in terms of having input from the public, from the bikers, from all the rest of it. When I look at your freight advisory committee, this is all loaded for people that are freight. And if the criteria is how fast can I move my shipments to, then it's not going to take into account anything from anybody else. It's commuters, or cars, or whatever. So it seems like you should have some input from somebody that's got that viewpoint and can get in early enough that you don't come out with proposals that are all loaded towards making the freight move faster.
I wouldn't have a problem with freight moving faster, but those tend to be very expensive projects that could also mitigate some of the problems that they've created to start with, as well as, you know, again, it's a balanced, more holistic viewpoint of the system itself. You know,
yeah, that's a good point. Cool. Thank you. So with the bike report, which at this point we are still in developing, so I think, you know, we talked about it briefly last time, but what I really wanted to do was kind of throw out where we're thinking, what sort of issues we're having, and what we have for you to react to, and you know, bring back a full draft in about 4 weeks to, you know, put it out and get comments. But, you know, at this point, I think I really want to hear from, you know, everyone and what you're, you know, what you think is important, what we should be focusing on, what shouldn't, kind of the things that we're dealing with. So, you know, every 4 years, the last one was in 2012. It was kind of the first time we really looked at on-road. We had a huge amount of kind of priority corridors listed all across the area. A lot of those are probably infeasible, or, you know, they're 150 years out from things happening to them. So I think, you know, figuring out how we want to prioritize on-road, looking a lot of the off-road, you know, I think really making those connections between trails, and I'll go through that on the map a little bit, but, you know, making those kind of those final links, meaning the Freedom Trail to the towpath, or, you know, kind of connecting trails where we're only a quarter mile and there's, you know, a dangerous area between them, and really looking at, you know, the whole AMAC's goal is to promote biking for transportation, but, you know, a lot of people looking at, you know, who is using what people's comfort level is as far as, you know, using them. A lot of people, you know, their number one preference is separated paths, whether that's a trail or more it's like a separated path along the road. You know, that's the majority of people will be comfortable using. You know, we try to get a lot more people just on bikes, and then slowly, you know, as they gradually get more comfortable, they'll, you know, can do more on road on their own. So, you know, I think, like, how we look at those, you know, like, one thing I was thinking, you know, really priority in the safe routes to schools around school zones. I think that's a relatively easy one, you know, something that we should be looking at. And maybe that's, you know, one of the best ways for on-road. But what we did start with was really revising our trail recommendations. So if you look at the map, the green is what is existing. The red is what is funded. And the blue is what we have recommended. So things like, if you look in Akron, the Freedom Trail, which runs between Talmadge and Akron, we have funding for to get almost to the towpath. There's still a small section there. We funded in along Middlebury Road between Talmadge and Kent, looking at, you know, there's currently the trails come close, but they're not quite, and there's bad sight lines, it's a dangerous bridge. So there'll be, and that's a bridge going over the river. And then eventually the goal is then to also get into the hike and bike towards Stowe. Same kind of looking in Hudson, really making a lot of those connections. They do have, we have some money. They've gotten private funding too, which is a lot of why they have quite a bit. So really that's kind of what's committed. And then recommendations the last plan we had, you know, almost the 100-year plan of if we could do everything we wanted with unlimited funding, what would we do? And so this one, I'd like your opinion, but I'd like to strike a balance between showing a vision for what we want, but also what's realistic. You know, if we're not going to be able to get to something, you know, trails are approximately a million a mile. So, you know, to show something that will happen for 50 years. So I want to keep it realistic while also establishing a vision. So looking at things that I know the park systems are working on and, you know, that really help make some of those more connections. So at that point, I guess I'll stop talking and kind of just, if you guys have any ideas, you know, I can talk more about things that we're working on. But I'd like to kind of just your general thoughts on what you really want to see us to be focusing on or pushing as far as our projects and what types of things with cycling should we be looking at.
If I'm not a biker, and my question is going to come out of pure ignorance, but as the system is being developed, what's the, you take a paved bike path with, well, like at Middlebury Road, you have a parking lot, you have some infrastructure there, and it's obvious it's getting some pretty good use. Families seem to enjoy it a lot. But what's the life expectancy of a facility like a bike path?
We currently do not have great data on that. I'm not sure offhand how long a path typically, you know, I think it depends. You know, we don't keep ratings on paths as well as we do roads.
Well, as you gain knowledge
but,
of that,
yeah.
What's the vision about replacing it? In other words, at some point,
yeah.
Wear out or potholes? Or
at this point, AMS is not funding any kind of like reuse, especially, I mean, some of the parts of the towpath are older. We're not doing maintenance when we still have a lot of the system we want to build out, is where we are at least at this point in time. So a lot of that will be on the communities, on the parks. You know, I think in another 10 years, but I think at this point, you know, our priority is still building the system. But I think that's definitely a concern moving forward.
Okay. At this point, do you see any other issues that might creep into the whole system, like security, like night riding, you know, things like that? Any ideas on that?
In general, and I'm sure there's other people in the room that can answer this much better than I can. I mean, my overall impressions are, I mean, we don't have huge safety issues. I think a lot of it would be minor break-ins at parking lot or, you know, at the trailheads. I think, you know, like with anything, there's a common sense. But, I mean, right now, safety is definitely not what's keeping people safety from, like, on trails, for say, getting robbed or something like that. Safety, the dangers are much more from cars than anything else. I mean, that's the...
Do you see any seasonal issues like snowplow or shorter days? When, you know, I'm sure as winter comes and daylight is limited to, what, 7 or 8 hours a day? Good daylight hours shorten up considerably?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that provides challenges. I mean, you don't see as well, people don't see you as well at night. I think that's bike and safety issue, which, you know, we have to kind of address and keep, you know, people safety. I mean, snow removal is a huge one. Some cities are doing quite a bit. I think that's, you know, a large thing to consider with what types of facilities, how you can handle that. But so those are all, I think, you know, those issues that we have to think about as we, depending on what type of facility we recommend and fund, is how you keep it cleared. And also, I mean, that's a lot of enforcement. Everyone's required to plow or shovel their sidewalks. I don't know of one community in our area that would ticket anyone that tickets people. So a lot of it, you know, I mean, there's what you require and then also the enforcement. But, I mean, those are issues that kind of, you know.
Is there any place where, under the current system, that a bike trail crosses an active railroad, for instance?
Yes.
Can you think of any?
I mean, I'm trying to think of ones offhand. I mean,
Big Bend.
Yeah.
Which is the towpath, by the way. Metro Park, Chicago Valley line. I don't know that others. I know we have some busy streets, River Road, and we have to put up signals, special signals. That would be something to look at as well. Mm-hmm. There might be lines, additional technology or box or things like that.
To Mike's point, though, if you build out, we're going to have the same problem we have right now with the roadways. We don't have the money to fund the new construction of them.
Mm-hmm.
That should really be taken into consideration. That's more of a push, I think, for doing complete streets versus doing separate bike paths. I know the bike paths are nice, but
mm-hmm.
I think about the future, too, if now we're going to have $100 million projects like the main Broadway interchange.
Yeah, and I think complete streets projects on roads are a huge looking at going forward for, you know, really connecting destinations and things. I'll look a lot more into the maintenance issue. I mean, I think, you know, a newly paved trail, just like a newly paved road, is nice. But, I mean, the life expectancy, I think, is quite a bit longer.
I'm not so sure of that because the bike and hike trail, particularly up going north mm-hmm. and out to the Stowe, was replaced after about 10 years.
Which
is about what your pavement type mm-hmm. and asphalt is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you may need to really look at the design of those pavements.
Yeah, or how they're being constructed. Yeah, I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, that isn't built.
I'm not sure what.
Right. Yeah. And that's not going to be the trucks, it's going to be the freeze.
Could you ever conceive that the bike trail would be like the turnpike? You would have a commission and there would be polls or user form or a fair one.
But you've got something different. You've got different people owning it. You've got the parks, you've got a national park, you've got metro.
Most of the trails are used by people that are hiking as well.
Yeah.
And they're probably the most used by people rather than the over the road right now, and they're usually the first entry point for people that might want to start getting out.
I'm just thinking that the replacement cost is good.
Yeah. Which brings up another one. We want to buy the wall. If I can hike out of Manaway, that trail, we've got that marked here, it's on here. And that trail isn't usable unless somebody goes in there and does some maintenance.
Yeah, it's in pretty rough shape. I was on that this summer.
That would be one I would think you would fund just to get it in shape. And mm-hmm. didn't that have a connection up to Hiram?
Yeah. Part of it still is Hiram gave back funding because they were unable to come up with a local match.
So they didn't finish.
Or they didn't want to, no. So at this point, we're kind of focusing on other areas. But there is still a small connection near the schools that is going to be completed. But that would be more local than regional.
Well, from my standpoint, you know, I'd love to have all these trails out there. But I think if the complete streets is part of it, just you put more bikeable areas on the streets so we mm-hmm. can use existing stuff, and we're going to get more people out quicker, and we're going to get more places.
Kind of back to the trail thing. I think one thing we don't do is start formulating a sustainability plan or how to engage. Maybe you do need to engage the communities more in the maintenance of their mm-hmm. sections of trails. It's still pretty new, you know, figuring all that out, but I think it would be the same with the freight system. You know, we're just building it. We don't really think about the next time we got to pay for it. We just assume the money is going to be there. I can say the same thing.
I can say you don't pay a thing.
Huh?
In the case of the rail system, you don't pay a thing for it, except the crossing program, which is Operation Lifesaver. There's federal money available for crossing protection. But that's to keep people from, like that picture we saw on the screen, driving around the gates trying to protect people from themselves. So, you know, is it a fair thing that we have to spend millions of dollars to protect relatively?
You know, when freight was initially established, we played for plenty of it. You know, I mean, that trails are relatively new from the point of view of even that the maintenance is sort of an unknown question because they just haven't existed that long. So in terms of getting something, a system off the ground, you know, public funding.
Well, I'm just saying, I'll be dead, but I mean, there's going to come a time where somebody will have to deal with the replacement issue.
I think that'll end up being a priority in the community as to who's going to do that. And mm-hmm. right now, historically, the priority has been freight, motor vehicle users. We all pay taxes. We all use these facilities. When we start talking about complete streets, it's really, wait a minute, who gets plowed first? Is it the street or the sidewalk? And that's a priority issue. It's a real one. It might seem ridiculous at this moment in time, but depending on the priorities of the community, may say for the health and benefit and well-being, you know, building trails is a good thing. It's not, you know, I think we got to look at the over-the-road stuff, but it then becomes a priority of where you want to spend the dollars.
Well, it's an issue of whether you want eventually to have an all-weather system, for instance, or not. Right now,
I think eventually, I could see it eventually being an all-weather system.
You would be interested to see what Minneapolis
has the
best of those.
Mm-hmm. Again, so Minneapolis, Minnesota, they could probably speak to a lot of the maintenance, also plowing, and how they
drain material.
Well, Minnesota, the people in Minnesota, they want services and they're willing to pay. Well, Minnesota, this has historically been a high tax state. I lived there for 17 years. Right. You buy a new car in Minnesota and see what the license plates cost you.
Yeah. In terms of the recommended trails to the south, they go to something and don't connect. What's the logic?
If you take the, it's the Freedom Trail, but kind of right just east back where the blue line comes down, there is a old rail right-of-way that goes all the way down. We initially showed that. To my knowledge, and I'm going to confirm these with all the communities, is that they are not working on that whatsoever. So I think that's, you know, if they're not working on it now, then, you know, that's pretty far out. One thing I am debating, and I'm hoping Green can shed more light on this, is taking that, you know, kind of one that currently goes from New Franklin all the way through Green into Stark County. Right now, I know New Franklin is trying to do a feasibility study to the reservoir. So I know that's somewhat underway. At least, you know, they're starting to think about it, which means, you know, maybe in 2 years they'd apply for funding. I know Summit Metro Parks, their number one priority is the one heading to Wadsworth from Barberton. So I think they're very conscious of providing more trails on the southern part of Summit County. But like I said, I think that one heading from Barberton to Wadsworth is a priority. Again, I know we helped fund a feasibility study with the Portage Park District from Kent to Mogador Reservoir. So I know they're actively working on that. But continuing that further south would for sure be the long goal, but I think that's pretty far out. So that's where, you know, one thing I had was, do we show everything and put those as, you know, very long term? These are, you know, shorter term still is 20 years, though, you know, so kind of what scale for, you know, is appropriate.
Yeah, I want to speak to this from Safe Routes to School point of view and some of the work I've been doing at Summit County Public Health. Active transportation. I agree. I see what you're doing. You've got scale. What lens do you look at this? This is sort of
this
like
is just off road.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
so I don't have an on road map. We have an old one that I need to tweak.
You literally could put everything down. It's like all the roads would get something. So I would suggest one, MS, start rethinking about doing a complete streets policy. Or their own, you know, which it would be a bit broader and could hit all that. The other suggestion would be kind of a midway for the road stuff is allow for each community to identify its current one priority corridor or small grid that's small enough to connect people to businesses, schools, parks. I'm thinking of Springfield Lake, you got the Spartan Trail. Twinsburg's got some connections they want to make between some of their public facilities, and I know it would open up for kids to be able to walk a bike if they could stay off road. It's just in Copley Township, and I know like they've got several things in a string if there was a way they could connect it up. Then you're identifying what we call a priority corridor. It isn't everything. When we did the Safe Routes to School, we'd go into a school, and we wouldn't hit all the roads. When we look at what's the one or two things that made the most sense that most people would be likely to use and identify that as a priority corridor. ODOT was allowing funding on those priority corridors for infrastructure improvements. You can kind of do the same thing.
Through safe routes funding?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think you could do a similar kind of analysis so then you're not getting into everything.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting to something that might be on the on a community's radar for the next 5 years that they would like to get funding for as a priority for them, and it kind of helps move them along. And maybe even if it's their first project, you know, even give special consideration for that to help encourage adoption of, you know, like the complete street that they may want to try. Mm-hmm.
I know you're. We did when people applied for. We have a couple pots of funding. One is specifically for bike and pedestrian. One is for everything, which typically those road projects. But our committee did up from 5 points to 10, which is 10%, up to 10% for complete streets elements. So bike, ped, transit, which I think from where we were 5 years ago is pretty big, but that's still, you know.
But if you, even on your map, if you're on your map, besides the trails, there's something else I would say, like bike community. Maybe it was Akron Pico Falls. We got like State Road and Main Street. That was the, you know, one of the things. Or again, back to, you know, Twinsburg, whatever, you know, how they want to connect up the schools and the parks.
Mm-hmm.
That would draw attention to at least those things, and it would address maybe adding the on-road facilities. You start building from that.
But letting the community choose those? I mean, I get
well, I think you need to, it would need to be collaborative because,
big input.
I mean, I think you could do kind of a GIS analysis of what are the assets that need to connect with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be also a community piece, too.
My understanding of complete streets is you're going to pave the road, and you're going to neck it down, you still keep your car traffic, vehicle traffic, but you provide that bicycle path marked area. So now you've got two modes of transportation on the same avenue without widening it. You're going to maintain it because it's in your city. You're going to pave it in the future. You mark it in the future. So are you saying use the complete street avenue idea in each city, township?
Well, not necessarily.
Well, and then once they've got their ideas as far as what needs complete streets, meaning the bike lanes are hidden in there, use those to hook up to the bike paths here through the county?
I think for, I would say that would work in, say, a city like Akron, Cuyahoga Falls, or Barberton, but when you're in Copley Township, Springfield Township, where you've got arterials, high-speed arterials with limited, they don't have curb areas. You could use the shoulders, but you're not going to necessarily let your kids ride their bike on there. A number of them already have separated trails that they're developing that would be great pedestrian use. It would be recreation, but, you know, typically I'm thinking you're looking like 3 to 6 mile loop or something like that that is actually fairly small relative to this scale, and it would provide opportunity. You know, they're not going to build it right on the road, and it'd be a lot more inviting experience for those communities. And I think some of the cities where we've seen like some of the highest bike usage in the country, or in some other countries, you've got like facilities that are more separated, or a network of like kind of the both types of facilities, but I think your average user, and I think you may have covered that last meeting, is not a cyclist. It's going to be somebody that just jumps on a bike and wants to go somewhere, and they're not going to go 20 miles, 10 miles, 20 miles. They're going to go like a mile or a couple miles to start. You know, if they enjoy that, they might go further. So in terms of this, like, you know, I look at this and I say, boy, that's great for people want to travel around and bike pretty far, but it doesn't really help in a smaller community that simply just wants to get their kid to school without, you know, instead of busing everybody, you know, they could actually walk because there's a way to get there. That's, you know, not with the 45, 50 mile an hour arterial that's the only that's going through.
Can I comment real quick? Jim, because I think complete streets is more of a principle than it is a road typology. Mm-hmm. I think what you were just describing is more of a road diet.
The idea is to maintain the vehicle flow that the road was built for, cars and trucks.
Right.
But that's just provide that bicycle, pedestrian,
So complete streets will require that the roads and the right-of-way includes amenities and facilities that accommodates. So that's more of a just a general principle.
Right. And the only people implemented are cities, not parks, maybe another township.
There's a location, you know, rural areas may not necessarily need certain facilities that where they don't make sense. That's why I just want to make kind of distinction there between road diets and complete streets. I mean, road diets can be incorporated into a complete streets principle policy, but
and maybe applying that, I could just think we've been discussing Springfield 91 and 224. It was traditionally set up as an expressway, and no places. I mean, you've got neighborhoods and you've got places to go. But there's no way to walk around it. Same thing out of Montrose, really. And so now, complete might be really thinking about that. You know, I don't know how far you cut the speed down, but you can sort of make it look and feel a lot different and invite people to use it to live nearby. That's the mitigation thing. You know, we built it, so now can we make it so that it's better?
As far as, I mean, my kind of thought, yeah, we talked about the different types of cyclists, but I know Portland's used it. I read a couple of studies where they took it further. But in general, it's, you know, there's a large percentage, you know, some people will never bike. But then if you take the remaining people, there's, you know, a group that will, like, are here, they'll ride on, they're pretty comfortable on trails. And that's, you know, 70% of people.
60-70%.
And then you've got, you know, small group that's pretty comfortable on there with some facilities, and you've got 3% of cyclists who will ride anywhere comfortable anytime. So they're not going to be worried about, you know, if we as a region are really going to try to be more bike-friendly, you're looking at those two middle groups and how you get more people into, like, you know, that kind of using the trails and even getting some of those people that are more confident on the road. And to me, you know, safety is the number one thing, I think, to those groups. You know, to getting people, and to Andy's point, a lot of the communities that have been successful are in getting, you know, mode shift in cycling is more separated paths. I mean, I think, you know, if they're on road, not on road, but adjacent to roads, you know, not through woods, they, you know, serve a lot more of a transportation function. That's kind of where I'm starting to lean, if we're really going to change the region. Sorry, you had that.
I had it in both specific and broad, but speaking to Andy's earlier point about planning as far as freight and roads, we have a very immediate situation with the new interchange, right? Mm-hmm. In a situation now which is extremely dangerous, and as one of those 3% type of cyclists, I'm very familiar with it because I also lived in Summit Lake. So.
Okay.
So that having an opportunity both to do something when that road is for pedestrians and cyclists, in terms of encouraging those middle groups, as well as I see, like with the opening of the Firestone Triangle building, that there's no accommodation has been considered for people who could walk to that building from Summit Lake. You know, there's no new cross, but there's nothing. So, you know, it's one of those journeys that could be very easily made on foot, but it was not even considered in terms of a new facility like that opening. So, you know, it's like that kind of whole thing of attitude shift, and at what point are these other voices coming into conversation? So, you know, where that is concerned, just bring that up and, you know, sort of as an advocate for, you know, the timid cyclist, I'd love to sort of be a part of that conversation and, you know, and see that, see what you're describing also grow.
Sorry,
I was just going to say, you had just said that in those communities that have seen more mode shift occur, they shifted towards protected bike trails off right of way. Is that what you said? Or
shared use paths.
Shared use paths.
So, I mean, they could be 10 feet from a road, but they function like a trail but along the road, but they still have that separation.
Now, are they separated bike lanes? Is that what you're saying? Or are trails off of the right-of-way itself, or are they separated bike lanes on the right-of-way?
I think both. I mean, more of like a protected bike lane. I think the number one thing would be the like trail that more functions as if you're 8 to 10 foot trail alongside the road that's separated completely, you know, by like a 10 foot grass kind of thing. I think the next level down would be, you know, it's separated but it's in the right of way. But you know, maybe it has, you know, a striped lane or it has bollards, or you know, ideally it would have a small tree lawn or something that would, but then that would function more like bike lanes. But I think complete separation, whether it's in the right of way or off to the side.
Having some sort of physical separation.
Physical barrier, yeah. Traffic is what it makes people comfortable.
Okay.
I mean, you're the majority of.
I just don't know where we have right of way off the right of way.
Well, I think,
So it seems like.
Right of way is a lot wider than the paved travel
sidewalk.
Yeah.
The pavement will be 25 feet wide, but it's a 60 foot right of way.
Absolutely.
And there's 20 foot of grass on each side. So you would still be in the right of way, public right of way.
Okay.
In some places.
Some places.
It just depends on how many. And I think that's where coming back to what you were saying about identifying corridors in each community. Maybe there's one or two places in each community that really would be a priority, and it can be a mile stretch, but it would connect two things. Maybe that's really the focus.
Yeah, not just a quarter, but I actually think they get circles.
Network,
they get loops,
yeah.
To minimum grid or
Crystal, if I may interject, we've got 16 minutes to go before they lock us in for the night. We're all citizens, and this is a sounding board in a way for the MPO, for AMAT, and these comments will be forwarded as part of minutes up to the policy committee. But you also need to talk to your mayor or your township trustees, depending who you are. I mean, get right in their face and take your notes and say, this is what we're talking about. My mayor has a first Tuesday in Cuyahoga Falls. You can talk to him. Been there. I mean, mayors and whatever. I've given my ideas to our city engineer. You know, I'm not an engineer, but hey, my ideas. I see some of them on State Road in Cuyahoga Falls. So.
Yeah.
This is one avenue. You have the other avenues that you elect, and that's the one with the policy committee. So tell them you're interested in complete streets, safe routes to schools, more bike, more exercise, good for us. The cities can control what happens in their area or the townships or whatever, because they can widen the street, put in a diet, put in a marked bike lane. It's not separated, not the best, but it's better than riding on the bike on the sidewalk with pedestrians and kids. So it's a process. I appreciate everybody else showing up here tonight. Pretty good. Good turnout.
Yeah. Definitely. I think people tend to, elected officials hear what gets complained about, and they tend to hear the complaints. So, you know, if you don't, whatever they hear is, even if it's the, you know, few small people, you know, they're what they tend to think the priorities are.
I wouldn't call it complaint.
Not complaints, but
constructive ideas for our community.
Any other things as far, you know, as biking to really that, you know, you think are priorities for, you know, as an NPO to push it more at like a regional level, like things that we should be looking at or ways that, you know, just any general ideas?
I'm sorry.
I think having some broad general priorities. Or goals. I think I made this sort of same comment in the pedestrian plan last year, having some fairly broad goals, so projects that may not be highlighted on the map, you know, might be inclusive still.
There, I think we saw a really nice bicycle report from Copenhagen. It was like that, in that it had goals for road shift, it had goals for facilities. They're just real broad metrics, you know, as far as here we are now, where we want to be in 5 years. You know, that's actually pretty good.
Any other general comments, thoughts?
Well, I never thought I'd heard myself. I hear myself saying this, but, you know, if you're really revved up about an issue, the policy committee, they still give the two minutes.
Yeah, you can always talk to the policy board, which is
you can appear before the policy committee. I did it when I was chairperson here. And also another thing is the good old letter to the editor in the paper. If you're really passionate about something, that's another way. It's the old school way, but a lot of people still read their daily paper
or social media.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't help but notice, despite that, Matt, a lot of disconnected segments where there'll be a green line and there's another green line over here. Perhaps there's too many people working on this, too many communities involved. Maybe just have a single entity, maybe Metro Parks for Summit County.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who deal with the bypass. They're the one. They have an excellent park system. They maintain their parks.
Mm-hmm.
And that would handle the maintenance down the road, because unless something happens with funding, they maintain what they have. And they would have them, having a single entity would be a more, what we're looking for here?
Cohesive,
yes, thank you. Plan, where you're not going to have a trail go down to the Akron Corporation limits and just end. Now it's Akron's problem, or did Akron even want to have a connection there? It's one entity. They can plan to start to finish, have a master plan.
Yeah.
If there's going to be that kind of an organization, because they're split between two counties and so forth, it's got to be AMAX.
Yeah.
So if you guys want another child, we can give you some more responsibility.
You know, have their long-term base, like you said, they do have a long-term, and they have priorities. You know, I talked with them, a lot of this is...
Not everything that they gave us is on this map, because a lot of it is, like Krista said earlier, a lot of pie in the sky. It's way down the road.
But, like the Turnpike Commission,
call it a commission.
England, East Detroit, we're the only agency looking at least the two counties, so, you know, I think...
May I have your
attention? But no, I think that's a good, you know, trying...
The library will close at 10.
Connecting things.
Please like, check out.
Making those circles would definitely be the goal.
Just as a matter of for a while, the Fight Club is having its first ride on Saturday. It's called Big Spring Park, starting at the Silver Creek Park in Stowe.
Okay.
And it's a 20 and a 35-mile ride. It's free, open anybody can come out on the ride.
Friday night, 7:30, there's a Fight Party starting at Fight Kitchen at Lock 3.
7:30.
And then there's a swap meet.
You guys have that in the enjoy section of the
No, but it's on our website.
Cool. Well, thank you everyone for coming. I appreciate it. Have a good night.